And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to a new edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Yep.
Where she will literally bring the apocalypse upon this franchise.
Because it deserves it. Actually, no. You know, apocalypse is... First of all, hi, I'm Sasha Kaplan. I'm bitter, and I am a bitter X-Men fan.
You bitter? No. No,
I am an extremely bitter X-Men fan about... If you have not realized how bitter I am about the X-Men franchise at this point, please go see the, like, Days of Future Past review. But no, the word apocalypse is unfair. I'm bringing Doomsday to this movie. Because, you know, Doomsday is significantly more intimidating. And two, because this is the shittiest version of apocalypse I have ever seen in my entire life. And that's saying something, considering, you know, you get a brief glimpse of him at the end of Wolverine and the X-Men. He shows up in X-Men Evolution and in the X-Men the Animated Series, plus comics. So, like, all right, you know what?
I like how the initial trailer release, they made him purple, and everything everyone said about him was, hey, they brought back Ivan Ooze.
I remember that. Yeah.
Which is ironic. Ivan Ooze is
a character from the Power Rangers movie, the first one. But yeah, you know, he does have a few things in common with Ivan Ooze. But we will get there when we dissect the characters at the end of the review.
You want to know something very ironic? So who made the first Power Rangers movie?
Who?
Fox.
Oh, dear.
Who made the X-Men movies?
Fox.
What did Disney used to own?
Power Rangers?
Yes. What does Disney technically own?
The X-Men?
The Power Rangers movie from 1995.
Mike, revenge is a dish best served cold, Disney.
I just wanted to point out irony there real quick because we drop Ivan Ooze, you know.
Well, we will get to that movie eventually when we return with Voices from the Grid. But until then, let us continue my suffering through the X-Men franchise. Okay, so first of all, before we even get started, two things that should be noted. Bryan Singer sucks at a lot of things. He also sucks at history. I'm going to get there. Remind me about the history of it, because I am a historian. I can't. All right.
Hey, Sasha, don't forget the history.
Thanks. You'll have to. All right. So Charles narrates about mutants, the gift or a curse, as like the sand dunes travel over through the Sahara to Egypt, circa 3600 BCE. There's people who are bowing and chanting or something like that about Ebsabanur, he looks a little too Egyptian-y with like a Ra or a Ra costume. So he's supposed to be like the, okay, all right. So in the comics, this is the first comics moment that should be noted. Apocalypse is a character that originates from ancient Egypt in the comics. He also, funny enough, Michael, you will appreciate this. The character of Apocalypse actually had origins with another character that trounced through ancient Egypt, Ramatut. Ramatut has another name, Kang the Conqueror.
Ah.
So, that's just a fun little tidbit. So where Ramatut, because he time traveled, there was a spaceship and he was considered a god. So here, Apocalypse is also a god. He has four horsemen with him. And there's some guards that like exchange funny looks and like, they're probably up to something. So the four horsemen are wearing heads of, I'm going to guess here, Seth, Anubis, Horus, and Sakhmet. So Anubis is, I think, the Egyptian god of the dead. Seth is like the like an evil-ish god or something. Horus is the son of Osiris, a nephew to Seth. And then Sakhmet is the goddess of vengeance. So interesting choice of horsemen there. I'll give them credit for this one. So Apocalypse arrives inside a pyramid. So we are in ancient Egypt. But it should be noted something funny here. As we see Apocalypse entering, there's like things coming out of his head into his body. They look like wires. Ha! So in ancient Egypt, Ebn Saben-Ur actually looked like an Egyptian, but he had this like grayish bluish skin and like funny tattoos on his body. So like he didn't have wires. So there's a body waiting for him, and there's a lady with like white hair who just looks really pasty in comparison. And the sun, basically he like sits on the slab, the sun hits the pyramid, shenanigans start to happen, and the guards outside signal one another. They seal the tomb's entrance, and they say something like death to the false god. The pyramid gets crushed, the horsemen are basically useless, the blonde lady like protects the new body because Apocalypse is being transferred to a fresh body, I guess. And basically everybody dies, but her last dying breath, she encases the Apocalypse in a cocoon or something. So then we use the X tunnel, or like the tunnel, and this is actually kind of a cool way to do the credit, where it's like traveling through time. We get flashes of like the Nazis and World War I and things like that as they're traveling through time. It was actually a pretty cool visual. It's funny though, because it flashes to the new dollar bill, which wasn't introduced until like the 21st century. So that's just useless, but we get it. You need to show the people that don't know history that this is a passage of time. If you don't know what era Nazis showed up in, my condolences to you and to society as a whole. Anyway, so we also see the twin towers, which went up in 1973. So we go to the school in history class, and we learn that Magneto is a fugitive, Mystique is a hero. Sorry, it's not a mutant school. Sorry, regular school, history class, that Magneto is now a fugitive, that Mystique is a hero who disappeared after the events of Days of Future Past, and a new age of the world. What does this new age look like? It's really not that much different. The only difference is mutants are not in hiding anymore, I guess. Scott says his eyes hurt. There's something wrong. There's a douchey football player who's like, why are you staring at my girl? I'm like, because clearly him rubbing his eyes and in searing pain clearly means he has nothing better to do than stare at your boring girlfriend. But okay. So the teacher tells him, he's like, can I go to the bathroom? Something's wrong. And she's like, you can also go to the principal's office and tell him you're disrupting class. I'm like, what? He's in pain. Like, are you stupid or are you blind? And it's not him disturbing the class. It's the stupid football player that has apparently an unnecessarily healthy jealous streak. Like, what the hell? Okay. So the bully jock basically class ends shortly thereafter, and he follows Scott he leaves the class and follows Scott into the bathroom. There's too many bathroom scenes. So Scott's powers manifest and he blasts the kid away. We flash to East Berlin. Now, East Berlin is its own entity from the rest of Berlin. It's being split and it's, you know, not controlled by the government of Germany. Okay. So we see a mutant fight club. We see Angel, Warren Worthington III. Forgot to add I have him as Warren Worthington II here, versus Blob. And then the next challenger is brought in from the Munich Circus just as Mystique arrives at this underground fight club. So do these films hate Angel? Like, what is this hatred towards Angel? Because the first movie had him, had Ben Foster as Angel and wasted him. And like, he had a really great scene where he gets to save his dad and that's about it. And then that one time of like, he's a kid, like he does have his own sort of like awkward off to the side here side plot, and here he's just here to be abused. But what I will give this movie credit for in this scene is that they actually changed the design for Angel's wings. They're not angelic, they're kind of bird of prey-y. Like, there's a cool moment where he, like, uses the like, claw. What's it called? It's not a claw. Talon, haha, on the wing. And he, like, scratches another mark on how many other mutants he's defeated. All right. So Angel fights a devil. So it's the Angel versus Devil fight. And, of course, the Munich Circus is, of course, our friendly neighborhood Nightcrawler. Raven goes to, so we find out that as Kurt tries to get out, that there's an electrified fence. And so Raven goes to this dude and she's like, hey, you want to see something? She like elbows him and that like knocks him back. I'm like, Raven doesn't have super strength. That was a little excessive, but okay. That,
well, no, that's not necessarily true. So it's a known fact that if you can get an effective, and it doesn't have to be like a super strong blow, you don't have to have super strength, but if you can actually throw your elbow up, and you can hit the person, especially in the nose area or in the face, you can effectively knock them out. That is actually a self-defense technique.
All right.
That is actually taught, and it's actually also a fight move that is used in like MMA and stuff to try to take out your opponent. Although they don't try to throw the elbow. They
thank
try
you,
to
Awesome Mania them. Podcast. So Kurt singes Angel's wings, the fence goes boom, chaos, people running, Raven takes Kurt and they teleport out. Kurt's like, oh, you're her, you're the hero. If he's like, I'm not a hero. I'm like, girl, I do not give a shit about your problems. I don't. It's like, Mystique is like the, I don't know if it's Jennifer Lawrence or what, but Mystique is like the single greatest annoyance of this franchise. And she's just so useless for most of this movie. She does nothing of value. But whatever, we have to prop her up as the greatest mutant now. Fine. Then we flash to the second stupidity of this movie. To Poland! Poland is not the stupidity. This plot is stupid. Where Eric is working at a factory of some kind, and his name is Heinrich. And then he goes home to the most predictable, soon-to-be-dead plot point of a wife and a kid. Now, it should be noted that in the original comics, Magneto did have a daughter. Her name was Anya, and he had her with his wife, Magda. And that an angry mob did actually kill the little girl named Anya, who was would have also been a mutant. Okay, fine. And then Magda sees Magneto basically killing all these people and runs away. So based off of, so first of all, it's stupid to have this plot thread now, because it really wasn't necessarily in the first place, because the only thing this does is expose Eric's location and give him more angst. And to be honest, surviving a genocide is angst enough. But also it should be noted, the wife is never mentioned by name. The little girl is, her name is Nina. Where they pulled that name out of, I don't know. But okay. Fine. So the daughter has a power if she can communicate with animals and like get them to do stuff, which is a pretty cool power. We've seen other, there's other X-Men in the comics or mutants that have that power. It's pretty cool. Anyway, so we flash to night now after Eric's come home and he sings his daughter a song in Polish. And he says that he learned his song from his parents who learned it from his grandparents and so on and so forth. What's the obvious problem here? Magneto is not Polish. Yeah. He was not born in Poland. He did not live in Poland. Now, if this was a song in Yiddish or Hebrew, that would make sense. If he sung it in Yiddish, I would have had no problems. But no, he sings it in freaking Polish. His family's from Germany.
Yeah, the family's from Germany, but you don't know what Polish heritage his family may have.
None! None that we are aware of in the comics. This is just Bryan Singer's bullshit. And Kingberg being a dumbass who doesn't know the difference between Germany and Poland. Like, I cannot. Like, does Bryan Singer have, like, is there, like, this is like, I don't understand this. Maybe if he like started singing it in Yiddish and then switched it to Polish and said that this was passed down from my family as like a cover. But what is the point of lying to a 10-year-old child or however old this soon-to-be-dead little girl is? Like, really? me loudly changing the page because I'm angry. All right. So the little girl asks, like, oh, what happened to your parents, Daddy? Yeah, they all died in a genocide and you're about to die too. They were taken away from him when he was a boy. He reassures his daughter and he has this locket that I guess has their picture in it that we've literally never seen before. I guess it's possible that, like, after the war and he escaped from Shaw, he went back to his old house and maybe found some photographs. But this is not, this is like a random ass plot point just to add a little bit of metal. Like, where did this locket come from? Where did the pictures come from? Like, I need a little bit of context. But we're not going to get context because Magneto is the forever perpetual bad guy for no reason at this point. Okay, so we found out that Alex Summers has totally not dead parents. Are these foster parents? Whose parents are these? He doesn't call them mom and dad, but we don't really know. Anyway, he's talking about Scott, his brother, who's supposed to be older than him. Like, my brain hurts. Like, how old is this child? So Scott is, like, let's say 16. Havoc has to be older than, let's say hypothetically he was like 18 in 1973, which still doesn't make any sense because he was a teenager in 1963. The timelines do not make sense. This is stupid because nobody looks like they have aged a day, and yet it's been 20 years since the events of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Anyway, and it's not as if, like, Alex has a brother he doesn't know and hasn't spent time with. He makes a comment of, like, oh, this is just Scott being Scott, as if he knows. When they literally never even mentioned he had a brother. Maybe once. Actually, no, I don't think they ever mentioned he had a brother.
I don't remember. Look, that was so long,
like,
ago.
Scott and Alex actually have, like, a really interesting backstory of, like, their parents, like, allegedly dying in a plane crash. His dad turns out to be alive later, and, like, they're separated and they find each other. Like, there's a lot of really good story points there, but no, because that would require dipsticks like Bryan Singer to pick up a freaking comic book. Or Jesus, even watch X-Men Evolution. They did it. Like, at this point, I think you just need to have, like, an angry Sasha meter. I think that's what you need for this episode, an angry Sasha meter.
That's a little
hard. How many times do I want to bash my head against the wall?
That's a little hard to showcase on an audio podcast.
No, if you'll figure out something. Anyway.
If we're doing this as a video thing, I could then probably, with the help of Ben, create a angry Sasha meter that can be filling up
something to consider for our next live event. Anyway, so Alex takes Scott to the most obvious place ever, Charles's school, and Scott bumps into Jean, and Scott says something like, oh, watch where you're going, and Jean's like, you watch where you're going, and there's, like, this cute little bantery exchange. I'm like, oh god, we're gonna do this again. Literally nobody cares about Jean and Scott's romance, okay? Nobody. We've seen it 50 bajillion times. This entire episode is just me shitting on this movie. I'm sorry. Actually, I'm not sorry. So Hank is still not blue and keeping it in check for some reason. Charles, meanwhile, is teaching a literature class, and we see and they're reading about, like, starting fresh and worlds anew and things like that. Scott meets the professor, and Alex is all like, hey guys, it's good to be here. I totally haven't seen you in like 10 years, but whatever. We also don't really know what Hank or Alex has been up to since he, you know, went home from Vietnam, but whatever. Lucas Till, who plays Havoc, I guess had a bigger role originally, but because he got cast in MacGyver, which is an awesome show, you should check it out, they had to reduce his role, which only begs the question of, like, what is the point of having him in the first place? Because what they do with him is nothing. They literally just kill him off in a little bit from this.
Well, I think they wanted to eventually finally do the brothers thing, albeit briefly, but then also use him as the way to introduce
Scott. At that point, they could have said that, you know, he was off living his life somewhere and maybe Set told Scott to go. Like, there's just not, it's a little bit frustrating, especially because they try to establish an emotional connection between the brothers and they just don't do it. So the options were either write something better or just don't write it at all. Anyway. So Scott meets with the professor. They go outside for some fun. We see like a bunch of kids playing something in a basketball court, and Jean is like studying outside. So Scott is allowed to open his eyes and shoot a target, except he's a Summers, so he doesn't just destroy the target. He just like swipes through the target and destroys the tree his grandfather Charles's grandfather planted, which was his favorite tree, and it just like splits apart. And all the kids are like whooshing backwards. And we see the same kid, a similar looking kid to the one we saw at the beginning of Days of Future Past, with like the white, like brown hair with the white streaks, which was, an homage to Days of Future Past, sort of. But okay.
Although I do find it funny that like Charles is talking about the tree and how fond of the tree that he is. And it's his favorite tree. And Scott's like, so does that mean I'm expelled? He's like, no,
you're enrolled.
Like, I mean, you get good dialogue like that here and there.
That was a nice bit. I'll give it to you. So back in Cairo, we see a busy market and there's a woman in a niqab, and it's Moira McTaggart, the most useless character in this entire franchise. So anyway, Moira follows some dudes and she finds this like weird tunnel under some wood in a tarp. And she goes deep into the underground caverns and she finds a tomb and some sort of pyramid tip, and she takes some photos. There's like men chanting. The pyramid begins to glow. The glowing continues, reacting to Ibn Sabanur, waking him up. They're shaking in the cave and everyone tries to get out. It becomes the shake heard around the world because Eric saves a guy from being crushed to death by some metal, like lava pooling thing, because of the shaking. And then, Eric actually uses his powers to save the guy's life. And several people see it happen. I'm like, well, this is the beginning. This is how it starts. Back at the mutant school, everyone is sent back to bed because of the shaking and everybody felt it. And Scott thinks that it was, Charles thinks it was Jean, because she's having a nightmare, and there's, like, shit melting around her, sort of, and I'm like, how does this happen? Is this the prelude to the Phoenix Forest? Fine. But it's an interesting little detail. So Jean has the nightmares and Charles tries to get her to get into her mind. She's like seeing a bunch of different flashes of fire, lots of red, people dying, and the flashes of Apocalypse. Apocalypse the person, although he's never referred to as Apocalypse. Not the literal Apocalypse, like as the moment of Apocalypse. So she said she saw the end of the world, felt more than just a dream. There's a dark power growing like a fire inside of her. We're already setting up for Dark Phoenix for no reason. Like there's really no reason to jump into the Dark Phoenix story and try to start setting it up here. There really isn't. You could have taken this into like, let's develop this new Jean and give her something of a personality and things to do, but then it's Bryan Singer, so we result to the same thing he did with Famke Janssen, where she's a liar, like she's the most like barely useful character, which is pretty sexist, I have to admit. And also I gotta say, most of the female characters are not treated very well by this movie. Like, Olivia Munn, who plays Psylocke, they put her in that stupid costume, which was very impractical and unnecessary. Storm's name is never mentioned in this movie. She's never referred to as Storm or Ororo, and it is the most unbelievably idiotic thing ever. Jean does a few things, but they're very minor. And then there's Jubilee! Mike had to step out for a second, so he did not hear me ranting about the fact that Storm's
hear,
name.
I heard it all because you're so freaking loud that I can hear it from my headphones while standing at the
door. It's the anger. It fuels my voice.
I've been hearing a humming sound. I wanted to hear what the humming sound was.
Anyway.
It's nothing in the room, so it's nothing's going to blow up on me.
So Jean is afraid of hurting people. Charles reassures her. Hank then talks about the energy surge he saw. They could have triggered Jean. So they go to Cerebro to take a look, and then he sees Moira in Egypt, and Charles is totally still into Moira. Eric tries to get his wife and daughter to run. The wife goes to get Nina, but Nina's not in bed. They go after her, and they hear her scream in the woods. They find a bunch of cops with no badges and Nina. So they know who he is, that he's not Heinrich, whatever his name is, that he's actually Magneto. And Eric tries to appeal to them. Eric says that take me in, but release my daughter. So they're like, okay, cool. So the girl is obviously upset and runs to her mom and starts crying like, no, let him go, let him go. Kudos to for like decent Polish. And so because of her power, all of these birds start to circle. And there's like, oh, you got to calm her down. And Magneto tries, but it doesn't do anything. And then one dumbass cop panics. And shoots an arrow, which goes from the little girl into the mother. And this is idiotic. This is legitimate. Like, Gail Simone would have a field day. Somebody should ask her on Twitter how she felt about this, because they literally refrigerated the mom and the little girl for no reason other than we need to shit some more on Magneto. Okay, so they're dead, and Magneto's kind of holding them, and he's saying, not my babies. I'm like, this is your wife and daughter. She's not a baby, but okay. Eric is crushed. He takes the locket off of Nina and uses it to kill everybody before they can blink. This is all just really dumb and pointless. I'm sorry. It's dumb to have this unnecessary side plot. It serves no purpose other than to give Magneto man pain. You know what would have been cool? A little bit of good old-fashioned Polish anti-Semitism. That would have been refreshing. And, you know, it could have shown that, like, Magneto is, like, even when he's hiding as a human, he's still not accepted by society, and he's still other. That, like, his mutant status and how he views humanity isn't always reflective of his powers. It also has reflective of his, the pain of being a Holocaust survivor. Like, okay. Eric then yells at God. Then we go to Egypt. Okay, so it's nighttime in Poland, but it's daytime in Egypt. Do you know what the time difference between Egypt and Poland is?
A couple hours.
1 hour.
All right.
So explain to me how it can be middle of the daylight in Egypt, but nighttime in Poland.
I don't know.
Exactly. This movie's stupid. Like, it took me literally 0.01 seconds to Google the time difference between Poland and Cairo. It's like, this movie makes no sense. Okay. All right. So Apocalypse walks through the streets. He sees like a boombox because it's the 80s. We see a little girl with wind powers. This is obviously Storm, and a bunch of thieves. And she's, I guess, the head of the Thieves Guild. Ha ha, give it reference. So she gets cornered by one of the people, I guess, she robbed or something. And then Apocalypse shows up. And he's like, who rules this world? And he just, like, kills this man. He dusts the other guys that show up. And then he just, like, has this other guy that has a knife, like, sucked into the clay of the building. Which was kind of cool. It was an interesting visual. And in her infinite child wisdom, Storm decides, this is a guy I want to take home. So back at the CIA, Havoc and Charles go to the CIA building. And they go to see Moira, and she obviously, remember, has no memory of ever meeting Charles or anything like that. She's read his work, and Charles kind of awkwardly stumbles through finding out that she has a son. The son is actually ends up being a mutant whose name is Proteus, but that's not important to anything. Because as we've learned with this franchise, they just like shoving random tidbits without any kind of anything really, but fine. Proteus doesn't have to be a plot point. That's a fine reference. We'll get to Jubilee, though. So they sort of, Charles stumbles through and tells Moira he has level 5 clearance to find out what the heck is going on. So apparently since 1973, there's been a rise in mutant worshiping cults of some kind. We don't really get an explanation beyond that. We're just supposed to accept that. They view mutants, compare mutants to gods. There's one cult that is called Ashir and Sabanur, which is basically, they think, is the world's first mutant. That was born like 10,000 years ago or something like that. Or tens of thousands of years ago, which like Moira needs a history lesson too. So apparently, so for some stupid reason, Apocalypse had the power to transfer consciousness, which is how he, and like each time he transferred consciousness, he gained powers from that person. I'm like, this is the biggest load of shit I've ever heard. Where the frack, like, there's enough ridiculous things in the X-Men comics that you did not have to make shit up. He couldn't have just been an immortal mutant. Like, that would have been perfectly fine, but whatever. So he had the ability to transfer his consciousness from body to body, mutant bodies. He always had four disciples or like four horsemen of the apocalypse. And Havoc goes, oh, like the Bible. And she's like, oh, maybe, or maybe the Bible got it from him. I'm like, oi. And so timeline-wise, that also doesn't really make sense. Considering Apocalypse was like 3600 BCE and Judaism isn't founded until like 1900-ish BCE and Christianity isn't founded until like late first century AD. Like, it's a stretch by a lot, especially when we get to the later stuff.
That's all religion, though. For timelines.
What's your point?
All of it's a stretch, no matter what.
That's your opinion. But I don't, like, I think it's kind of insulting to both, like, the idea that, like, Apocalypse is a, like, so something that Singer or Kinberg or one of these two morons said was that, like, Apocalypse thinks he's a god. Yeah, we get that. You don't have to tell us that everybody else thinks he's a god, too, because that's what it's implying when it's unnecessary. That is what I'm saying. All right. So, blah, 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 blah. Oh, it says, wherever he ruled, the world, like, whatever world he ruled ended in disaster. And I'm like, where do you get this information? Which places did he rule? Because the only thing we know of is Egypt. And then they killed him, or they thought they killed him. So, like, what other places did he rule? You also didn't tell us he was ruling in Egypt. The only reason we know it was Egypt was because you were there. Like a little bit of contextual information to make me believe in this would have been fine. So, also, funny story. You know which country Storm is actually from?
No idea.
It's not Egypt. It's Kenya. I hate this movie. I hate it so much. But we still haven't referred to her by name. She's just the white-haired girl. So, or the girl with the mohawk. So Apocalypse is taken to the Thief Hangout where there's Star Trek playing on TV, which is actually the episode where they meet like Apollo, who thinks he's a god. And yeah, anyway, it's a funny little nod there. We also see a poster of Raven and she says that she is Storm's hero. Do you know how insulting that is to me as a comic book fan to hear the word Storm that Mystique is Storm's hero? Like, it just sounds ridiculous saying it out loud. Why did this get no red flags in the writer's room? Okay. So Sabanur Suck, or the derpy Egyptian dude, because he's never given a name. Although they do sort of refer to him as Sabanur at the beginning of the movie, so I guess. But anyway, so he just basically sucks up the TV and learns about weapons and superpowers. I'm like, this sounds a little similar. Like, this is like Ultron digging through the internet. I don't know which one. I think this movie's significantly worse. But I'm like, this is the best you could come up with. clearly somebody needs some new material. Anyway, so he learns about the superpowers and how the weak have taken the earth with false gods and idols and blah, 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 blah. And basically he declares, no more, and I will rule this land, blah, 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 blah. So Apocalypse needs to cleanse this world, but he says, save. And he makes the girl thief stronger. So he imbues her with, I guess, his, like, energy, which is something he does do in the comics, if I remember correctly, to make people into his horsemen. Okay, so Raven and Kurt are only now... So Raven and Kurt, meanwhile, are exactly where we left them, even though arguably it's been, like, a couple of days, because, you know, by the time Moira got back to Langley... By the time Hank and Charles, or Scott, Alex and Charles went to Langley, which is in Virginia, like, the passage of time in this movie franchise is the most ridiculous thing in the entire world. To the point where I would rather watch time travel movies on loop than deal with this. Okay. Yeah, so Raven takes Kurt to Caliban in order to get him papers and passage for wherever. Caliban tells her that Eric has resurfaced and that he was seen in Poland and leaving bodies in his wake. We see Psylocke, who is, like, I guess Caliban's protector. Hank, meanwhile, makes Scott glasses, and there's a crack about, like, oh, thank you, professor. It's like, oh, I'm not a professor. I'm like, then what the heck do you do at the school? Like, you're a teacher? Or are you not a teacher? Or are you just that moron that makes the random weapons in the underneath the school? Like, what the heck? Why was this written in his dialogue?
Maybe it's that he's a teacher, but he doesn't like being called a professor. Then just say that,
like, oh, I'm just a teacher here. You don't have to call me professor. It didn't take a lot of dialogue. Anyway, there's, like, they think the new kid is a freak. I'm like, really? In a school full of weirdos with random powers, they have the room to judge others? But apparently they're actually not scared of Scott. They're scared of Jean. Whatever. They bond. Hank sees that Raven has returned with Kurt. So Caliban, meanwhile, sees Storm and Apocalypse, and they're looking for the strongest. Apocalypse has this whole shtick, survival of the fittest. He's very Darwinian like that. Caliban pokes a gun. Apocalypse melts the gun. Psylocke joins Apocalypse. We're really not given an explanation other than, oh, I have power. Like, Olivia Munn is wasted here. Psylocke is wasted here. There's so much you could do with such an amazingly interesting character. And they used her as muscle. And that's it. She has the personality of, like, she doesn't have a personality. She's barely any dialogue. Anyway, so he wants to set her free or whatever. Kurt meets with Jubilee and Scott, and they're going to go to the mall because Kurt's never been to a mall. And that's actually kind of cute. Jubilee is so cute. She's wearing the little yellow coat, and, like, she's just so cute. I love it. And she's going to be wasted here. Meanwhile, Angel is listening to Metallica. So, like, kudos. This is the best musical part of this film, because the rock music here is just so on point, and I love it. He's got a broken wing because it's, like, completely singed and, like, half the feathers are gone. I'm like, oh, poor baby. So basically Apocalypse gives him metal wings, and it looked really painful, but good music. Hank builds a new plane, and he wants to prepare for the worst because the world needs the X-Men. And he thought that, you know, after DC, that they were going to reconstitute the X-Men, but Mystique is like, Charles wants a school, not soldiers. I'm like, where did you get that idea? He wants a school, not soldiers. Clearly, whoever wrote this has never picked up a comic book. Anyway, they think that Eric might be in trouble. So this idea of Hank wanting to bring back the X-Men is great. Why is this not the plot of the movie? I couldn't give a flying whatever about Apocalypse and his story because it ultimately serves zero purpose and does nothing. You could have had any, like, if this whole thing should have been about the entire X-Men family from Eric, Charles to Magneto actually coming back together. And we sort of get that, but not without the emotional payoff that it could have been. It's very like, oh yeah, we should bring these guys back together. All right. So they think Eric might be in trouble. Eric arrives to work sort of and talks to them about how they'll finally witness his power. One guy tries to appeal to him, but it doesn't work. And then Apocalypse arrives with his merry band of misfits. And he says, who the fuck are you? And Apocalypse doesn't really introduce himself. He just kills the guys before Eric can. He's like, don't try to stop me. And Apocalypse is like, I'm not going to stop you. I'm just going to do it myself. Psylocke's suit is just a little too comic book accurate to the point where I'm like, you could have done something better with this. Like, no other female character is dressed like that. And there's nothing wrong with a little bit of sex appeal, but when she's supposed to be fighting in a war and being this warrior, I know you don't want to restrict her too much, but I'm like, there's no need for this. It really makes her stand out, which is cool. Like, you have a comic book accurate costume. Really awesome job. Great. But, like, what looks good in a comic and looks good on the screen, like, maybe you could say this is the costume she had, and Apocalypse helps, and she's like, I don't want this. This is not my thing. Can we fix this? Because he gives Angel and Storm new costumes. Like, come on. Even Magneto gets a new costume. But Psylocke is basically just here for reference purposes and nothing more. So they take Eric to Auschwitz. And this is where your power was born. And I'm like, how does he know that? Literally, how does he know that? Michael, I'm serious. I'm asking the question. How does Apocalypse know where Eric got his powers?
Because isn't he somewhat telekinetic? Or telekinesis?
They actually established he doesn't have that power. He can just sort of hide himself. Unless he, like, I don't know, is he touching? He didn't even touch Charles or Eric. So, like, how the heck does he know that? But anyway. We have, like, a flashback to, like, the gate, being separated from his parents, his mom yelling. So why bring Eric here? And then this is the part that pissed me off. It says, Elohim, Shen, Ra. And I'm like, no, you are not. Nobody was talking about you when they wrote this. Especially because the entire concept of God in Judaism is not corporeal. He's not a dude. In the, like, normal sense of the word. So there's no way that the ancient sages of Judaism were writing about this dipstick. He has had many names. Yeah, he really hasn't. He's just full of himself. So then he's like, oh, and Eric doesn't question this. And he says, oh, where were you when our people were dying? And when my parents were taken away from me, he's like, oh, I was in a cave. I'm like, it's not a good enough excuse if you're so all-powerful. Anyway, so Eric, he gets, like, I guess a power boost, or, like, Apocalypse helps unlock something inside of him so that he could move the Earth. This is a really cool plot point of Eric's powers that could have been really, really useful in not this movie. This is something that Eric actually does in Genosha in the comics, when they actually tackle the issue of Genosha. Which is what they should have done, but then they just kind of tossed it into the next movie, which was Dark Phoenix. So this is the part that cemented to me that this is going to be a shit movie. They destroy Auschwitz. They don't just rip it apart or topple it. They literally destroy it to smithereens. This is incredibly stupid. And to be honest, bordering on anti-Semitic, because Auschwitz stands as a living memorial. The last thing that Eric Lentra would do was destroy the thing that shows how shitty humans are to each other.
Yep.
So this is just Bryan Singer or Kinberg or whoever being absolute douchebags. Because this is not, there is nothing revengeful here. There is nothing in any way cathartic about it. It's just plain insulting. What was cathartic was when he shoved that coin into Shaw's head. That was cathartic. What cathartic was when he pulled a tooth out of a Nazi sympathizer. What was cathartic? When he freaking stabbed a freaking Nazi. That was cathartic. That was awesome. This is shit. So thank you, Apocalypse, and thank you, Eric, for giving Holocaust deniers a platform in your movie without even intending to. Good job! Hate this movie. Anyway, this is just plain disgusting. And it's sort of implied that Magneto is being manipulated by Apocalypse, but it's not really clear how he does that or why it seems to affect some people more than others, because Psylocke seemingly joins Apocalypse of her own free will. Storm thinks that Apocalypse is going to save the world when there's death, destruction, and she doesn't have the best life. Angel gets a power boost and wings back, including stabby, stabby feathers. So, like, yeah, he has an incentive to join. But it seems like Magneto's being manipulated because he just has this, like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm doing what I'm told kind of a thing. So, meanwhile, Peter's watching a news report that talks to his mom about going after Magneto. She tells him it won't end well. Peter has the Charles's old business card, so he goes to the X-Mansion. Alex, Charles, and Moira arrive back at the mansion while the kids have gone to see Return of the Jedi. So, okay, it's at least, I would say, a 5-hour drive between Virginia and New York? Maybe six?
Yeah, about that. Depending on what part of New York you're coming from, because if you're driving...
Westchester.
Where is that exactly?
It's like north of New York. It's about an hour outside of New York City, I think.
Okay, so you're probably looking at about 5-6 hours the most, maybe 6 to 7, depending on how 95 is.
Yeah, so if I'm following this movie's logic that Langley's like an hour away from, I mean, I guess she could be at a flagship office in New York, but they don't say that. They say they go to Langley. So this is just, the passage of time is despicable in this movie, like truly. Anyway, so the kids go to the mall. And we see that, so it's Peter, Scott, Jean, Kurt, and Jubilee go to the mall. And they finally get Kurt some cool clothes, and he's actually wearing the Michael Jackson jacket, and it looks pretty good on him. And they also went to see Return of the Jedi. And they're like, oh, the third one is always the worst. I'm like, yes, yes it is, and this movie's no exception. So kudos, Jean, your psychic abilities picked up on the shittiness of this movie. Good job. Good job. Hi. Anyway, so Charles sees Raven, and Raven says she doesn't want to be the face of a world that doesn't exist because apparently not everything is magically perfect the way she thought it would be after what happened in DC. Because, you know, society totally changes overnight like that. Yeah, so she's bitter because bigotry still exists and mutants are still being persecuted. Well, then do something about it. The only thing we saw you do was go to an underground fight club and rescue one whole mutant. Like, do you want points for that? Like, what are you doing? Anyway, Raven's here because of Eric and fills Charles in about what Eric's done. If Moira needs to keep... Oh, so then they go to Cerebro to try to find Eric. And Moira's there for no reason. He's like, you're going to have to keep this a secret. I'm like, then what's the point of bringing her in here? Leave her in your office. So we see the humans, then we see the mutants, then Eric, we see Eric meeting with the other horsemen as they get new armor, and like, Angel gets an entire freaking makeover to, I guess, make him look a little bit like his self from the comics, which is a nice tidbit. But it's really confusing. Like, why is that being done to Angel, but nobody else? It was just weird. But Angel also doesn't have much of, like, a character. So, talks to Psylocke is basically the same. So they talked. Charles wants to help Eric. He reaches Eric. Eric tried things your Eric says he tried things your way. I'm like, when did you try things at Charles's way? He literally has never tried it his way. You're like, oh, he says he was like living among them. I'm like, but you really weren't. You were hiding yourself because you didn't try things his way earlier and ended up a freaking fugitive. Like, and as shitty as what happened to his daughter was, you could argue it was an accident. It was a very conveniently placed accident of shitty writers, and but whatever. So Angel's new design is kind of lame. Then Charles sees Apocalypse, and then he like overloads Cerebro. Charles sees what Jean saw, which is the world dying or whatever, in red. Thanks for letting him. Then Apocalypse says, "Thanks for letting me in." No more stones or spears, no more whatever. It takes over. So then he like takes over all of the nukes around the world. And they all get sent to space or something. And he says, no more superpowers. So nukes get released. Cerebro won't shut down. And then we see like the World Security Council or whoever the whatever it is, government, Pentagon. They're like, oh, all the world's nukes being released. Israel, India. I'm like, Israel has never confirmed or denied the existence of its nuclear arsenal. So anyway, Charles says that to destroy Cerebro, Hank's having some trouble, so that the power's not far from his hands, I guess. The nukes go to space. Apocalypse thinks he's God. Havoc destroys Cerebro, but the bad guys arrive to take Charles. Havoc lasers them after they've taken Charles, and he just goes straight through the building and causes an explosion just as Peter arrives and the kids are around the corner coming back from their trip to the mall. So Peter just kind of seems to think something's wrong, but there's no like rumble. You can't really see an explosion, but whatever. He goes in and rescues everybody, including a dog that is there, but whatever. So because of the rescue, is I guess is very tiring on Mystique, and she reverts to her blue form, and the kids all gasp and they look up to her and they need her. But where's Alex? Alex was closest to the blast, so he's dead. Scott runs into the debris for some reason, thinking he's gonna find his body or whatever. And then Jean and Kurt go after him. This is what I meant about emotional payoff. They kill off Alex, and then Scott is grieving, and the only reason I feel anything is because I know in the comics these characters are brothers, and they have a long history of caring about each other, sort of. But for a movie audience that literally met Scott 2.5 seconds ago, there's no emotional payoff. You're like, you have more emotional fact over Alex's death because you knew him from First Class. And this just proves to me that like that Bryan Singer hated First Class. Because again, the character that dies is the character from First Class. So essentially, there are the only people that were teenagers from that time that are still alive from the First Class is Raven and Hank. All right, so Scott is grieving. The military arrives just conveniently with Colonel Stryker. Oh joy, I've missed him so. It's been one whole movie. Stryker takes Hank, Mystique, Moira, and Peter, but says to leave the kids. I understand Hank, Mystique, and Moira. Why Peter? Oh, probably because Peter broke Magneto out of the Pentagon, I guess. But anyway, but they leave the kids. They have some kind of serum with them. I don't know if that's supposed to knock them out or whatever, but they had like the sonic boom that toppled everybody. Kurt, Jean, and Scott are unnoticed because they were away from the blast radius. And Jubilee is knocked out, and we never see her, I think, until the end of this movie briefly. Waste of Jubilee! Jubilee is an amazing character. She deserves better than this. She's awesome. She didn't even get a chance to use her powers. Like, come on. So the kids wake up, and I guess there's like one other whole teacher because we see her teaching in a classroom. So I guess she's corralling the kids. Good for her. So they take, Scott's crying over Alex, and Gina's like, oh, Alex loved you and he knew you were going to be better than him. I'm like, how do you know this? You didn't share a single piece of dialogue with him in this entire franchise. Don't tell.
Didn't have to, because if you remember the very first time that Scott gets introduced to Jean when he's still blindfolded, he has the thing where she's in his head and Alex is with him.
Oh, that's such a cop-out, and you know it. So anyway, Jean, Scott, and Kurt decide to try to rescue them and get inside the helicopter, but the helicopter has a magnetic field, so they can't get out. So they're basically stuck hiding, but guess where they get to go? To the totally most original place ever, Alkali Lake. It's not even, like, does Canada know that the U.S., I assume, the alleged U.S. government military outfit at Alkali Lake exists? Because I feel like the Canadian government has something to say about that. Anyway, so Charles wakes up on the outskirts of Cairo, and Sabanur wants Charles's body. Charles tries to reach Eric. It doesn't work. The prisoners wake up at Alkali Lake. Hank is blue, because I guess he didn't take his meds. The source, basically, they want to know, the military in the 1980s managed to figure out that the source of the nuclear command was sent out. I don't know how they would know that. That the command was somehow traced back to the mansion when their energy, brainwaves, sound barrier, whatever.
I think it was just a ploy from Stryker. Because he wanted an excuse to go to the mansion. Because
that's just too convenient, and this entire side plot is completely unnecessary.
Well, no, but that's the thing, though. The moment that the whole thing happened, and you know, Stryker has always had Xavier's mansion profiled the entire time. The moment it happened, he went, "All right, I have a reason to go to the mansion. And I'm going to use it to go to the mansion."
I know, side plot is stupid and serves no purpose other than a glorified cameo from my least favorite mutant.
Yeah, but, the thing is, though, is that, he probably just lied about the fact that it came from the mansion because he just wanted a reason to go to the mansion to take mutants.
That's way too convenient. I'm sorry. That's just bullshit.
It works, though.
It barely works. Anyway, except he wants to know the source of the nuke. So the military probably had some technology that traced it. Anyway. Nuke command was from the mansion. They followed it, took them to Canada. So Hank asks Moira Moira's like, "Oh, I'm a federal agent of the CIA. You can't hold me here." And Stryker's like, "Yes, I can." And she's like, "No, this wasn't Charles. This was a being far more powerful." And Hank's like, "What the frack are you talking about?" So the kids are inside the facility, and they're going to try to break the others out. Charles has to tell the world that they'll serve Apocalypse, and that Apocalypse basically amplifies Charles's power so that he can reach everybody's mind. Peter asks if Raven really knows Magneto and what he was like, and if he's like what they say they are. She's like, "Well, yeah, sort of, yes, sort of, no. But why do you want to know?" "Oh, he's my dad. Didn't know that 10 years ago." I'm like, "Yeah, you pretty much did." And Peter was
He hints at the idea that he might have known.
I know.
But he wasn't 100% sure.
Oh, please. And then he was like, "Oh, I was too late in D.C. or something. Then I was too late to Poland. I'm super fast, but I'm still always late to everything." I'm like, "You're not Pietro, but whatever." Charles projects Apocalypse's message, but then he changes the last line. It says the strong should protect the weak. But he sends Jean a hidden message. He tells her to go to Cairo. So the powerful will inherit the earth, yada, yada, yada. The kids end up being spotted because of this message. Then they go into this control room and they see this locked person inside this chamber. And it is literally, it's freaking Wolverine. This, you could literally cut this part of the film and reshoot them hearing the message and nothing would change. This entire side plot was orchestrated by Singer purely so he could have another shot of a half-naked Wolverine to look at. That's it. That's it. So Gene,
except for the fact that it actually helps them out to get rid of all the security and stuff like that, so they can then
I don't mean just that. I mean literally this entire part with Stryker taking the mutants and then them releasing their friends could have been cut out of this movie. I don't just mean Wolverine. I mean literally this entire sequence, all of it. It does nothing except leads us to a half-baked after credit scene that could have been done with any, it didn't need the setup. It really didn't. We'll get to that. So Jean releases Wolverine, and of course, Weapon X goes through everybody and just kills everybody. Also, this invalidates that scene at the end of Days of Future Past that I ranted about. Because at the end, Logan is picked up by Stryker, but at the very last second, we see that Stryker is actually Mystique, which I said was stupid because Mystique didn't never exchange a word of dialogue with Logan and barely knew who he was. So it made more sense for Stryker to have been the real Stryker, but that scene still exists, so...
I mean, yeah, that's a continuity flaw, but at the end of the day, Wolverine still ended up where he was going to go, which is...
I know, but it's still... there are enough continuity issues with normal X-Men comics. Don't add them to the movies, okay? Like, just don't. Okay, where was I? So the kids use the Carnage as cover, but then they stop at one point and see Wolverine, and Jean helps to awaken something in Logan, some like surface level memories to give him back his semblance of his person. And she also takes off the stupid helmet thing that he wore in like the 80s comics. Which is a nut. I will say this. Aside from the shitty plot and a lot of these pointless scenes, there are some really cute nods to the comics. Like Psylocke's outfit, despite how kind of unnecessarily impractical it is. Like Jubilee, like Nightcrawler later on, things like that. Like the helmet. Like these are great nods, but in a really shitty movie. All right. So Scott makes a hole inside the cell wall and everybody gets out and they gotta go get the professor. Nerd begins destroying the world. Begs the question of what purpose the Four Horsemen serve. Like, in the comics, they were supposed to, like, prepare the world for his arrival or something. But here, they're just sort of there to, like, be his disciples. And, like, do his bidding. But they don't really do much, though. Magneto does most of the work.
Yeah, I was just about to say, it's like Eric does the majority of the work out of all of them.
Right, like, if he had posted them at different parts of the world to like start destruction, that would make sense. While he built his like cool department cave of wonders or whatever, right? That would make sense. But they're all in one place and they don't do much. Like they're like legitimately, there's a point where like Storm for like a solid 10 minutes does nothing. Anyway. Apocalypse built himself a new pyramid and the X-Men steal a plane and flight suits. Let's get to war. Let's go. Oh, and there's this awkward thing of Mystique turning to Hank and saying, let's go to war. I'm like, it was just a little, like, I understand it's supposed to harken back to their exchange, at the mansion, but it feels really awkward here. Noor gives Eric a new helmet. Charles will be the new host for Apocalypse's body. Raven offers words of wisdom, which is a callback to the first class about how she was nervous on her very first mission. And every teen character from first class is dead now. But apparently Mystique, like, saving the president changed her life, that changed everybody's lives that way, that day. And I'm like, okay, whoop-de-freaking-do. It would have been cooler if it was Magneto. I'm just saying, like, it would have been so much cooler if Magneto had been the one to save the president. I just like this ultimate, like, that would have been perfection. But I'm not allowed to, be happy in X-Men movies. So Eric is pulling shit from the earth and stealing metal from various parts of the world or whatever. The oceans too, using the magnetic elements of the earth, wiping everything away. This is just like, there's a lot of overkill here. Like, there's no reason to, like, destroying Auschwitz is overkill. Like, Apocalypse seems very overly powered in some parts and very underpowered in others. Like, there's just lack of consistency in this film. And it should be noted that the majority of the action starts to happen here in terms of fighting and things happening. There's not a lot happening, really. So Charles calls Noor another false god, but in the new temple, he's like strapped in, and that Charles's telepathy will prevent future betrayals. The X-Men arrive in Egypt, and Jin picks up what is happening and tells the others. Why is Moira here? Like, they don't need her to fly the plane. Hank can fly the plane. Why is she here? She does nothing for the rest of the film. Literally nothing. She sits in a plane.
Someone's got to keep the engine running.
You don't need anybody to keep the engine running. It's a plane. You just turn it on. You're fine. All right, so...
Okay, first off, planes do not work the exact same way as a car does. You know, it really doesn't.
Yeah, but you still need to... You can power it up. It's not going to fly away by itself. Anyway. So Raven, they have a plan. Raven will talk to Eric while everybody else goes to Charles. Peter says he's going to come with Mystique to go see Daddy. Okay, great. I still have hope. The first time I saw this movie, I still had hope. Like, oh, good. We're finally going to address the whole Peter being, you know, Magneto's dad. Like, we're going to finally get something out of this. So Raven reverts to her blueness, and says that, like, this is not, like, don't try to control your powers, because God says he doesn't have total control of his powers. Like, just go for it. There's some awkward flying. There's a moment where, like, Apocalypse tells Angel to, like, go protect him. And the wire work or choreography for this scene for Angel's actor is just a little awkward. Pyramid does the glowy, floaty thingy. Kurt makes it inside, but Angel follows. Jean and Scott have to fight Storm and then Psylocke 2. Like, I think Hank throws something at Storm, but then, like... Psylocke shows up and, like, slices through the car, which was pretty cool. And she exchanges zero dialogue with anybody. So the Golden Pyramid activates. Jean tells Kurt to hurry. Angel's on his tail. Ha, he's on his tail. Get it? Because Nightcrawler has a tail. These are Hardy. The jokes, people.
Hardy, har.
Raven tries to reach Eric, but there's a magnetic field barrier that Peter can't get through. Tells him that he hasn't lost everything. He has more family than you know. And Peter's just kind of there. And he's like, I'm here for my family too. And I'm like, why? This should have been the moment. This was the perfect way to break Magneto out of the trance he was in to tell him, look, your family's not dead. Your entire heritage is not over. You have a son. But no, they ruin it. Oh, God. So Jean is not doing much at this point. Hank, she's, like, hiding out. Hank is being whipped by Psylocke. She's, like, choking him with a Psy whip. Then Hank breaks free, throws a threshold around. Charles is putting up a fight against Apocalypse, trying to take over his body. Kurt manages to take care of Angel. Charles loses his hair. Finally, we get a bald Charles. Everybody was so excited for it. Literally, nobody cares. Kurt goes back to the temple to get Charles out. Jean Then he takes her to Jean to help the professor. Then Scott. He starts taking everybody back to the plane one by one. First Charles, then Jean, then Hank, then Scott, or whatever. They try to leave via airplane. I'm like, wait a minute. So Magneto is still destroying the planet. Mystique clearly hasn't been doing anything. There's still Apocalypse to deal with, but the solution is to run. Well, it doesn't work anyway, but it's just a weird point here. Like, the entire world is about to be destroyed, but rescuing Charles is the priority? Really?
Well, they actually explain it. Jean says, as they're landing the plane in the first place, going, if Apocalypse can transfer himself into Charles's body, he will be able to control everybody.
No. I understand that.
That's why saving Charles is the priority.
Fine, but you can just, like, stash him somewhere. He can't go anywhere, and Apocalypse clearly can't find him because that's the next point. He actually can't find Charles. So you could have taken him anywhere and then stopped Apocalypse because you still have to stop him. Charles, him taking over Charles's body would just make him unstoppable. You have the chance to just stop him now, but they decide to, anyway. So they try to leave, but Angel takes Psylocke and they both attack, get into the plane. Kurt manages to teleport everyone out, and that's a lot of people. That is Scott, that's Jean, and Charles, and Moira, and Hank. That's 5 people our poor baby has to teleport, including himself. But he manages to do it before he passes out. Raven sucks at motivational speeches. Like, she gives some half-assed, barely written dialogue, and somehow that is enough to break Eric free. Like, it's a load of shit. It's a pure load of shit. It would have been better if it was Peter, but no, this entire franchise needs to revolve around Mystique's problems and continuously make Eric into a bad guy. So, like, it's so stupid. So as Jean had, before everybody teleported out, Jean had set the plane to be destroyed or into crashing or whatever. So Psylocke manages to jump before that happens, but Angel dies because the plane crashes and goes boom. They killed Angel for no reason. They barely established him as a character and they already killed him off. He was a founding member of the X-Men, and he's been treated like crap in 2 franchises. Anyway, so we see, after Raven gives her half-assed speech, we see some flashbacks to a conversation that Charles and Eric have, where Charles convinces Eric to actually stay and, like, stop Shaw or whatever and work together and find the mutants. And then there's, like, that single tear that falls. That single tear has been the biggest cliche in this franchise, and it's very frustrating. So Noor talks to Charles and that they're connected. Peter punches Noor and makes some good headway before Noor traps his one leg and breaks the other one. Poor baby. Oh, also, this is the other plot point that'll be carried out into Dark Phoenix. Shitting on Peter. Psylocke comes to end Peter, but slices Noor instead, and that turns out to be Mystique. Storm sees that it's Raven because she reverts to her blue self, and she's being choked by Apocalypse. Raven's dying, and give your life for their... Basically, he tells Charles to, like, give his life for theirs, and Charles has to, like, go to Apocalypse. I'm like, he's not going to be able to go to you. He can't walk. So Charles realizes that he can get inside Apocalypse's head, and he gives him a dose of what he's feeling, and he sort of breaks him up a bit. But this would have been such a cool moment to do, like, a psychic battle, but we don't get that. It's like, we barely, it's very half-assed. Says, you're in my house now, and, like, the psychic, like, plane ends up transforming into the mansion, but then Apocalypse sort of fires back and really overpowers Charles. So Noor finds Charles, and he grows bigger in the dreamscape, and then he thrashes Charles. Jean looks on. Eric makes a metal X in front of Noor to show that he's, like, free of him. I'm like, wow, that's a nice nod, but also kind of cliche, and also you were never an X-Men in your life, but whatever. We have to remind people that the word X-Men is actually part of this movie. they talk about betray, and Anura's like, oh, you betrayed me. It's actually, no, I betrayed them, so now I'm back to where I was. I'm like, all right, that's a solid line. I'll give it to you. So Anura has this shield, and then Hank and Scott jump in to help in order to get Raven and Peter. So Magneto starts, like, thrashing Apocalypse with, like, all of these metal things, and then Scott just lets off a laser blast, and they're all, like, coming at him from two different directions. It doesn't really do anything, though. But Charles is losing his battle and needs Jean. Moira says they can't stop him. And Hank can't do anything. Scott gets tossed too. Charles is not alone. And Jean finally does something. So she enters the mindscape and it says, unleash your power. Go, Jean. Go, is basically what Charles says. Like, you can do this, Jean. I need you, Jean. Oh my God, Jean, save me. So then Jean versus Apocalypse, and she just, like, tears him apart, kind of. The Phoenix Force rips apart Apocalypse's armor, thus allowing Eric to trap him with the metal. Then Scott fires an optic beam. Storm comes to help, too, zapping him with lightning, and kills Apocalypse. So this combination of everything kills Apocalypse. Psylocke leaves after literally not doing all that much. Waste of a character. Charles has stopped breathing, but Jean says she can still hear him, and then he wakes him up via mind meld. And then he's like, where are you? Moira asks, like, where are you, Charles? Do you know where you are? He's like, I'm on a beach in Cuba with Moira. And then he reminds her of everything, and then we see the single tear falling again. It's very annoying. Then he apologizes to Moira for erasing her mind. Then Kurt wakes up. He's fine. Everyone is fine. Eric aids in defeating then we see, like, newsreels, apparently, like, Moira's entire purpose for being here was just to report back to the government about what happened, and says that Eric actually aided in defeating whatever this force was that almost destroyed the world. So what, and then the question is, what will this mean for the future of mutant kind? Because, you know, a mutant just sort of tried to destroy the world, but then mutants saved him. So, like, what do we do with this information? So Jean and Eric work to fix the school. Peter's got a cool new cast with a bunch of, like, people signed it. Aurora asks Peter about telling Eric that, is it true that he's your dad? He's like, yeah, I'm going to tell him one day. I'm like, are you kidding me? And then that Peter plans to stick around the mansion, and Aurora says she's going to stick around too. Are you kidding me? They had the opportunity to tell Peter, for Peter to tell Eric that he's his father, and it's wasted, and they don't do anything with it. Why? It would have been perfect. Eric deserves better, and Bryan Singer needs to stop and never touch an X-Men property again. Actually, Singer and Kinberg both need to never touch an X-Men property again, ever. So, the world is rebuilding its nuclear arsenal, as one does, and Eric looks relieved / kind of more relaxed as he talks to Charles outside of the danger room. They talk about the future, and then this is something I really liked. They have this line in the towards the end of this film where he was like, you know, are you ever worried about what's going to happen when they come for us and things like that? And Charles says the same line, almost identical to the one that Charles tells Eric in the first X-Men film all the way back in 2000. It says, I pity the fool who'd be stupid enough to break into the school.
Wait, did you just turn into Mr. T while saying that line? Like, I pity the fool who comes after this school.
It was something along those lines. You can look up the exact
dialogue. I actually did, but... and yes, it's pretty much, it's like he did go Mr. T and go, I pity the fool. But he did go, it's like, you know, I feel sorry for those who will.
I pity the poor soul that, yeah, you know, come seeking trouble at the school, something like that.
Yeah.
So this is where there could have been a really good opportunity for Eric to actually stay, because, you know, Raven just told him he had a family, right? Family means a lot to him. But no, Eric leaves again for some reason. Meanwhile, Raven is training the X-Men, which is Peter, Aurora, Jean, Scott, and Kurt. I will give credit here because Scott's outfit actually mirrors the, like, not 80s, 90s Scott Summers Cyclops outfit. Even Kurt is wearing the correct colors, and there's, like, kind of subtle nods to the comics. I actually really like that, so kudos there. And then the danger room opens to the Sentinels, because it's the danger room. And so this is training, and Raven is there to train them. I'm like, girl, nobody trained you. You're barely qualified as anything, let alone teaching children. I don't want you near children. Okay, so the Sentinels come out, and then the movie ends. And then we have the after credit scene, where basically a bunch of government nut jobs arrive at Alkaline Lake as everything's being cleaned up. And
I feel so bad for that those poor souls who had to vacuum up every single bullet shell.
Yeah. So anyway, so they go to this like fridge and they grab a single vial of Weapon X blood and they put it in a briefcase with a bunch of other vials, close it, and then the briefcase says Essex Corp. As of right now, because I literally only watched Logan once and have very little recollection of it except for the part that pissed me off. So what this actually implies to me as of right now is that Mr. Sinister is going to be the bad guy for Logan. Based on the fact that I have zero recollection, I'm going to guess that's not the case.
I haven't watched Logan in a while, so when I watch it before we record, I'll...
So, this movie manages to make a travesty of history, of time, of basically insult people of all religions, and is an absolute waste of space. So, look, this movie could have been about two things. One, it could have been about repairing Charles and Eric's friendship, which had now been strained by two movies. This movie could have been about the importance and value of the X-Men, even in a post-Days of Future Past world, right? Because Hank says, like the X-Men are still needed, right? That's what this movie should have been about. And it's sort of about this, but it wastes so much time on Apocalypse that I cannot even tell you what the actual point of this movie is. Because I think it's trying to be that the world still needs the X-Men, but it does a really piss-poor job of showing it. Storm, I've said this once, I need to say this again. Storm is never mentioned by name. Not a Storm, not as Aurora. That is just beyond insulting. And this is actually a repeated trend in several of these films. Like, stop it. I don't think Jubilee is even mentioned by name. Oh no, maybe once when she introduces herself to Kurt or something. Eric's wife has no name either. Like, he never actually, like, Eric doesn't call her by her name. I think he calls her honey or baby or whatever, but, like, no name. And to be honest, so there's a bunch of shit you can cut out of this film. You can cut out this whole bullshit about the family. Like, you can cut out that entire sequence at Alkali Lake. And it really arguably changes nothing. Like, yeah, and then, like, again, you refrigerated Eric's family just to give him angst. He has enough angst. Don't add. I still cannot believe they destroyed Auschwitz for stupidest reasons ever. There's a lack of solid direction in this film. It's sort of trying to tell a bajillion different things while also setting up the Phoenix Force and also introducing the original X-Men and a quote unquote original, the like 2000s X-Men, then the actual original X-Men. And there's like way too many things happening here. Pick something. When Jean, I remember watching this movie in theaters, and when Jean comes out of the movie theater, she's like, oh, the third one always sucks. I'm like, oh God, I hope this is not this movie's defining itself. And guess what? It did. Because this is I think it is worse than Days of Future Past. And I shat all over Days of Future Past. Because this movie manages to waste Apocalypse, who is one of the coolest, most intimidating, and arguably the scariest after Mr. Sinister villains in the entire X-Men Rogues Gallery. We finally have a really good mutant villain potential, and it is wasted and half-assed. This is not even talking about the character design, which is atrocious. Like, Dwayne Johnson should have been Apocalypse. Would have done a better job.
Well, one of the people that was brought up apparently for the role was Idris Elba. But honestly, Idris Elba deserves better than this crap movie. But at the same time, is it really Oscar Isaac's fault?
No, it is not Oscar Isaac's fault, because then Idris Elba also would have been wasted in this movie. The writing in this movie is despicable. It is absolute trash. I don't understand what the point of this movie is. I don't even understand what message this is trying to tell us about mutants in society.
Well, I got good news and I got bad news for you when we do Dark Phoenix. You got good news and I got bad news. You ready for the good news?
Let's start with the bad news.
No, let's start with the bad news. Because you want to start with the good news. The good news is that Bryan Singer is not involved with it at all.
Like, oh, I know. But then the bad news is the movie's still a piece of shit.
The bad news is that the writer's still Kinberg, and Kinberg also directed it.
Yeah, which is like... Which is why when I said that Bryan Singer should never touch an X-Men film, I said that Kinberg shouldn't either. Because I know he was very heavily involved in this movie.
Oh, and that's the only movie Kinberg has ever made as a director.
Let's hope it stays that way. But honestly, the directing is not the issue. Well, we'll get there when we get there.
Well, correction. He apparently has a movie coming out in 2022 called The 355, but...
I ain't watching it. So Kinberg also said that Apocalypse is the darkest villain in the series. I'm like, bitch, in the comics, yes. In this franchise, no. I'm sorry. The Apocalypse is like the least intimidating villain of this franchise. Trask is more intimidating because he literally sets off an apocalypse, a real one, and a dystopian future. Shaw is a scary villain because he's a freaking Nazi, even though it pretends not to be a Nazi. Like, even though I had issues with Shaw as a villain, like, Shaw and Trask are way more intimidating as villains than Apocalypse is. Apocalypse is a very inconsistent villain. He lacks direction. He lacks a believable backstory, and he lacks actual everything. Like, there's just so much time wasted on him building up as a horseman that the entire payoff is pointless as a result. Psylocke is wasted here. You could cut her completely out of this movie and it does nothing. They also, like, already addressed the Peter and Eric situation. And also, Singer compared to this movie to Game of Thrones, and that's only funny if you compare it to the Game of Thrones finale. But yeah, so I know this movie is like made bank worldwide, but it did less financially than Days of Future Past domestically. And even walking out of the theater, when you don't have the time to really watch the film where you can like pause it and take notes and overanalyze it like I just did, I still remember leaving the theater with my brother very disheartened. Like, I was so sad because I loved Apocalypse as a villain in the original X-Men the Animated Series. He was scary. He was intimidating. He was powerful. He had this roaring voice that felt like it was melting your body. Like, even, just, like, there's so much you could have done with the concept of Darwinism within mutant society, right? But this goes back to what I said a very long time ago, is that these films are very based around the villain of the series. If you think about it, like, less so in Days in First Class, because that was very much about Charles and Eric's dynamic. Trask is almost the central character of Days of Future Past, because his actions are the ones that set off the dystopia. Well, Mystique is sort of involved, but without, anyway. But here it's all about Apocalypse. I don't give a shit about Apocalypse. Take me back to the school. Give me Jubilee. Give me Kurt and the kids at the mall, because there's no way nobody gave Kurt any funny looks at the mall. Give me a film that is actually about how society is a piece of shit to people. That would be more fun. Give me a film about, okay, Disney. I'm prepared to beg right now. Disney, give me a good X-Men adaptation of the storyline about Genosha. I don't care what I have to do to get there, but this is a story that needs to be told. Because that, I think that's the only story left to be told, if I'm being perfectly honest, unless you jump into House of M shenanigans, but like, let's not go there. Where you can tell the story of a small country where mutants are enslaved and have a character like Magneto come in as the savior and this is what this movie could have been. Like, the entire world has accepted me. Like, think about it this way. Forget Apocalypse. I'm rewriting this movie right now. Okay, you ready? You ready?
Sure.
Okay. So the entire world, let's say, has decided to become semi-more tolerant of mutants. And let's say Mystique, if we have to keep Mystique as the most pointless character in this franchise, if she's the one doing good deeds or whatever, let's say she's like, oh, she hears about this place called Genosha. Like, oh my gosh, Genosha is like a place where mutants go to vacation. It's like totally welcoming towards mutants. And let's say she goes undercover or something and she ends up in Genosha and realizes that this is not the case. And maybe she gets away, maybe she doesn't, or maybe she sends a signal for help. And then Charles has to go find Eric to help rescue Mystique from Genosha. And then you realize that Genosha is like this, like apartheid taken even more to an extreme. And Magneto becomes so disgusted that he's like, this is what I was telling you would happen. And then Charles maybe gets a little bit of like, oh, I see now what Eric's talking about. And then the entire thing is them completely destroying Genosha and rebuilding it as a mutant nation. Like, that would be so much cooler than what this shit movie did. And then as a result, you don't base the entire story on the villain. You base it off Charles and Eric actually have to reunite for realsies this time and actually work together. And you can add the other X-Kids into the mix now because Eric doesn't have an army and Charles doesn't have an army. And you can have a training montage that kind of harkens back to First Class, and like things could actually develop characters and you could have a plot where people can have personalities and do things that aren't just glorified cameos, Psylocke. As of the release of, so when I saw this movie, I was prepared to say this was the worst X-Men movie ever made. And then we get to Dark Phoenix. But if I'm being completely honest, Dark Phoenix is a shit movie, but it doesn't piss me off. Like, there's movies that are like, oh yeah, that's a crap movie, but you don't really have a visceral reaction to it. Apocalypse gave me a visceral reaction. If you've made it this far, you can see what a visceral reaction I have to this movie. I cannot stand this movie. And at first, I was like prepared, like, yeah, I remember elements of it being bad. And I was telling my brother that, like, you know, I remember not liking this movie. And looking back on it now, I actually, like, having taken a more analytical look at it, I actually hate it even more. Like, I genuinely hate this movie. And there you go.
So the budget for this film was around $178 million. Opening weekend did almost $66 million. Gross in the U.S. was a little over $155 million, so it didn't make its budget back, in the United States at least. But cumulative worldwide gross was about $544 million. So it was still technically a success financially.
Which is why they greenlit another movie.
Well, they had the other movie greenlit anyways. They already had a plan.
Well, it's a shit plan.
Like, you got to keep in mind, like, yeah, Dark Phoenix comes out like 3 years later, but normally they have plans. And then, of course, what delayed Dark Phoenix was also the fact of the whole Disney purchase.
It really wasn't delayed that much, though. New Mutants.
It wasn't delayed that much, not to the extent of New Mutants, where New Mutants went for legitimate hell.
Yeah.
Just to be released. I mean, and the hell was like, what, a decade?
It has not been a decade. It's been like 4 years, maybe.
Yeah, four. Yeah, what?
3 years.
Yeah.
Definitely like, not a decade. But.
Well, no, because they were apparently trying to make it like a long time ago. But yet again, 2020 has felt like a decade in general, so that's probably also the reason that I think.
Yeah, pretty much.
Apocalypse was 2 hours, 24 minutes, and it had an IMDb score of a 6.9 out of 10.
How does that rank against the other X-Men films? Because to be honest, I'd put it at like a, I would put it on par with Origins. Maybe slightly above Origins. Like Origins can be like a 0, and then this could be like a 2.
Let me find it.
Michael is looking for
it. Days of Future Past. What? Days of Future Past was a 7.9.
Mm-hmm.
Wolverine was 6.6. Last Stand was a 6.7.
Was it? You said the score for this movie was 6.2?
6.9.
Okay, it's only 0.2. Percent 0.2 points higher
it's 0.2 higher. It's 0.2 higher than Last Stand, 0.3 higher than Origins Wolverine.
Yeah,
and I can tell you right now, after already looking at Dark Phoenix, Dark Phoenix was a where was it? Is that it? No, Dark Phoenix was a 5.9. I know I'm jumping the gun on that because that's not for another like 3 episodes, but yeah, that was a that got a 5.9 on that one.
All right. Oh.
Oh no, 5.8. 5.8. My bad.
It's still too nice. Like this movie does not deserve a 6.2. It shoved too much action into the lat. It was just like lackluster on everything.
But isn't that like that for almost X-Men films though?
No, but like there's good action sequences, there's good use of mutant powers and things like that. Here it's like, oh, we need to have them use their powers. Oh, we need to create a situation where they use their powers. It was sort of like they were writing the plot around the powers and not writing a good plot, which explains the stupid Stryker side plot. We just needed to have Kurt teleport a few more times and have a cameo with Wolverine. And I can't. All right, you know what? I'm done with this franchise. I'm just done.
Well, you got 3 more films because we're going to push New Mutants back a bit.
Yes, we are.
So if you go to the website, you'll notice that it says episode 41, Straight from Purgatory. And then it has a note saying coming after WandaVision has concluded. That is because per the schedule, as I bring up a calendar real quick, like obviously this week is X-Men Apocalypse. Next week on the 31st, you're going to get Logan. Then on the 7th of January, you're going to get Deadpool 2. And then on the 14th, you're going to get Dark Phoenix. And then on the 15th is the debut of WandaVision.
So basically what you have to look forward to is a bunch of shitty films. And ranting about shitty films.
Well, that's bullshit right there. I'm calling bullshit. And here's the thing, and I'm going to talk about it on Awesome Mania 2, and I may actually bring you and Ben on to do the experience because I haven't done an episode of that podcast all year because of the fact 2020 has sucked. But because I can say this about the wrestling industry too right now, just like how it is with this, is it really that bad or do you just want it to be that bad? But I'm not going to go into that conversation right now because this has already been a very long podcast and that could be something that can be just a complete topic for a entire podcast by itself.
That's fair. I promise then to review these films in earnest and give them the fair shot that they deserve. Nothing more, nothing less.
Because that's something I've been noticing a lot lately is that, you know, and I could throw in Cyberpunk 2077 in there. Because everyone got pissed off that the game was getting delayed again because the developers need more time to polish the game.
Mm-hmm.
But because the fans started sending death threats to the people, to the developers and stuff, they put out a product that needs more work.
Yeah. So
I could throw this on video games, I could put it in wrestling, I could put it in films and other entertainment.
I'm not the kind of person that is... So this has been a very long episode, but just to kind of make a long story short, I'm the kind of person that there's things I like and things I don't, and I try to go into everything with an open mind. So, and I obviously am not the kind of person that's in death threats to people. So yeah, with but, that,
but
Michael.
But you get what I'm saying, though. But anyways. But
I don't live to hate these films. They just make me hate them.
But the thing is, that real quick. So the 15th of January, WandaVision comes out. We are going to try. What's probably going to happen is that Thursday the 14th will be Dark Phoenix. In theory, what we're going to try to do. I know you have a friend coming in because your birthday that weekend. We'll save the birthday wishes when we get there. you know, but the idea is that every Friday when WandaVision airs, we're going to record an episode, hopefully the day of, and have it go out that night. Obviously, we're going to put up a spoiler notice saying contain spoilers, listen at your own risk type deal.
Massive spoilers. You have been.
Yeah. So the idea is that Fridays will be after the 14th, starting on the 15th. New episodes will come out on the Fridays for WandaVision. Once WandaVision's over, we'll then do the New Mutants. And then I believe we're either going to go into Spider-Man or we're going to finally go into the DC films.
They're still Fantastic Four.
And
Spider-Man films.
Yeah, I know. But like, we could take a break from Marvel for a while.
No, I'm pretty happy so far. We'll see. So with that, Michael, where can the people find you on the social medias?
You can find me on Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions. And of course, I stream on Twitch Sundays, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time at twitch.tv/themichaelx75. And if you subscribe to me, you get emotes. I currently have a sub goal of 15 because if I get 15 subscribers, I unlock a new emote slot and I can unveil a new emote, which I actually had an artist create really cool looking emotes for me, including a Power Ranger one.
So. And of course, you can find me and my lovely, fabulous self on geekgirl101.tumblr.com, Geeky Captain on Instagram, Geeky Kaplan on Twitter, and read some of my comic book reviews on geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com. Feel free to message me, PM me, tweet at me. I love talking to people. I'm really excited to hear people's thoughts about my review of this film. So thank you so much for listening, and join me next time for what I hope and truly hope will be the last Wolverine movie I ever have to review.